Welcome to Wealth Well Done. Together, we'll cover a wide range of important topics surrounding money and the impact it has on our lives. From the sophisticated and highly valuable planning techniques of the ultra-wealthy to the commonly underutilized biblical teachings. Together, we'll work to improve our relationship with money and our effectiveness in stewarding it well. Here's your host, Eric Scoville.
Right, on to episode 49 of the Wealth Well Done podcast. Welcome and thank you for joining us. In this podcast, we love leaning into the tactical, the practical, and the spiritual advice to help you do your wealth well done. Last week, we put a focus around insurance. It's something we don't talk about very often here. And so I wanted to spend a couple episodes trying to add some light to the typical insurance products and policies that that most of the listeners here would be exposed to. And so we talked about the personal line, so the personal side of property and casualty insurance, meaning home, auto, umbrella policies, as well as disability insurance, or what they talk about as replacement or income replacement. This time around, we are going to round out the two other main forms of insurance from the financial lens here. And that would be long-term care coverage and life insurance. Now, we'll start with long-term care coverage just because there's not a lot that I want to cover there. We're going to spend more time focusing on life insurance. And as was the case last time, big disclaimer out there that this is not meant to be financial advice for you. This is meant to be educational, and hopefully it is. But I would strongly encourage you to talk with your financial team about any of these things that we're discussing and you know, how they may pertain to you. Life insurance, especially, kind of all insurance, but especially the life insurance, you've got to be careful. There are a lot of agents out there who are trying to maybe earn an honest living, but who, you know, when they only have the hammer, you know, the analogy here. And one of the guys, Jay Link, who has been mentoring me, and I'm so grateful for him. He talks about the typical answer here is a life insurance salesperson will say, the answer is life insurance. Now, what's the question? And it's true. I've seen it. We've had to unwind a number of really what I would call crappy life insurance policies that the agent had no reason to put in place for that insured, but they did it because they probably got a nice commission out of the deal. So anyways, let's dig into these here, but just understand, I'm going to give you my perspective from this. It might be a little jaded because I've seen a bad side of the industry, but I've also, man, there are some really wonderful ways that you can use insurance inside your planning as well. And so we'll dig into that here. Like I said, first we're gonna start with long-term care coverage. This will be a shorter one to get through. There are some really great older policies out there for long-term care coverage. My parents have one when I first got into the career, and we talked to them about this. My mom showed me her policy. I took it into the guy who was mentoring me, and he was blown away by it. He said, "This is incredible. Whatever you do, pay the premiums for this. Don't let this policy go." And so when they were early on, when they first came out with long-term care, that's not that old of a coverage. They, in essence, they underpriced it, and they set these contracts up with, they were, fixed premiums, meaning the premium wouldn't go up over time. And then with that, a lot of these, they have group policies as well. So if you're able to get this, through your employer, well, the coverage is really quite good, and a lot of times they don't have limits on it here, and so they've got no limit on the coverage and a fixed premium that's way, way, way lower than what you could go out and buy today. So as insurance prices or as medical prices started rising significantly, and more, the idea of long-term care facilities became more common, then the cost of providing that type of coverage to someone dramatically increased. And so most of the people who were selling these policies got out of the business of it. and those that didn't get out of it drastically changed the structure of these contracts. So there are, like I said, there are great ones out there. I've also seen a number of the older ones who are with companies that are in very, very poor financial standing. So it might be worth you to take a look at that as well. You can look that up online. But a new standalone policy today, if you go out to try to buy this coverage today, a standalone policy that just for long-term care is typically going to allow for annual increases to the rate. And they normally don't go up necessarily every year. But if you look on, you can look online and look at a specific insurance company and how many requests they have into each state, the state insurance board, to try to raise the premiums on these policies. And so it's a big problem inside that. And with these standalone policies, basically you have it for long-term care coverage. If you don't use it for long-term care coverage, then you lose it. No different than a home or auto insurance policy. It's a coverage that you hope you don't actually need to use. But the better way, in my opinion, around that is you can do long-term care policies inside a life insurance vehicle. And so what that does is, A, it fixes the premiums to there might be allowed for some very small changes in premium, but it's normally much more controlled than a standalone policy, which has no cap. So the premium is fixed, and it ties it into the death benefit. So if you have if you're trying to focus just on the long-term care, and you want a death benefit as well, so that way if you don't use it for long-term care coverage, all that money isn't necessarily out the window. That would go to your beneficiaries in that case. Then you could use that connected to a universal life insurance policy. And we're going to talk a little more about that here later, but that could be connected to a universal life policy. You're going to be able to call that a UL. And so that way, at that point, whatever you don't use will go to the beneficiary, or they could connect it to a whole life policy, which will allow you to also use cash value inside of that. They basically allow you to use it or use it or use it, use it or use it. And so there are good options there for people. The older you get, the more expensive it is. The worse health you're in, the more expensive it is. The younger you are, the potentially better off you are to just choose to self-insure and not even put that coverage in place at all. So really, really depends. Make sure you're not getting sold on this by someone who just has one motive in mind, meaning themselves. Make sure that someone's taking more of a fiduciary look at this to try to put the best policy in place for you and help you understand what you're actually getting. One thing to understand with this is basically when you do it inside a life insurance policy, the reason it's you kind of get the life insurance or the long-term care, which allows it to be a little bit cheaper there than the standalone, but you are then basically accessing the death benefit ahead of time. And so you just fake numbers here. If you've got $1 million death benefit and you use $250,000 of long-term care coverage, well, that just reduces the death benefit by that $250,000 then. So you basically getting access to that sooner. And so therefore that's why, the premiums are more than just a standard life insurance policy, because the chances of you using the money sooner go up. How these typically talk about is they'll talk about what the monthly benefit is. And so you might see a policy that's got a $7,500 monthly maximum benefit. But a total benefit of $270,000. And so what that would mean is the most you could use would be $7,500. And so if you went into, so a lot of people don't just go straight to a nursing home. They might go into, they're having some assisted living care come in first. And someone comes and a nurse comes and cares for them at their home, for a couple of days a week. And so they might only use $1,000 of that per month up front. And as time goes on, as the condition gets worse, then they're going to wind up getting into needing the coverage longer. And so they might start using $1,000 a month, then that $6,500 that was left over, because we're talking about $7,500 monthly max. So that $6,500 that's left basically just goes to the end of the line, stays in the pool. But they're only allowed to use $7,500 per month. And so once that cost gradually goes up, and then they're using $10,000 a month of long-term care costs, then they are going to still only get $7,500 a month of coverage there. And, you know, basically that $270,000 in this example would provide 3 years, 36 months of coverage at $7,500. But whatever you didn't use in those earlier months when you had the $6,500 left over, that just gets added back to the end of the line there. So you can use that in later months, but again, still that $7,500 max. So I think that's probably enough to say on the long-term care piece. Let's jump into life insurance. I subscribe to a little bit more of what Dave Ramsey talks about for a little bit. Dave talks about you're better off to buy term and invest the difference. And so we're gonna walk you through that a little bit here. And then I do think there's a point at which the net worth of someone would, you know, they kind of graduate beyond that. You got to think of who the advice that, who the audience is for Dave. I think Dave is wonderful for a lot of things. But once, you know, as the net worth increases beyond that, there might be very tactical reasons why someone would want to have a longer life insurance or a different life insurance policy in place. But I ran some numbers to help you kind of walk through these different types of policies here to have some comparison. And so everything we're going to be talking about is a $5 million policy for a 45-year-old male who got the top health rating. So when you do life insurance, they're typically going to have you go through an underwriting process. They're going to send a nurse out to your home to take your height, weight, a blood sample, your blood pressure, and a urine sample. And so then you can do a term policy. Is basically the premium is significantly lower than any type of permanent product. But whatever, if you don't pass away during the term, then that money is gone. And so people will often decide they don't want to have a term policy in place for that specific reason. But again, to the point that Dave makes of buy term, invest the difference, the money spent on term insurance and just investing the difference into some average performing fund will certainly net out to your benefit there. So to this $5 million policy for a 45-year-old male with top health rating, you know, they could expect to pay somewhere around $2,500 a year if they wanted that coverage in place for 10 years. If they wanted coverage in place for 30 years, then that policy would be closer to $9,500 a year in premium. When we talk about why the death benefit $5 million might seem like a lot to someone, so how do you determine the right death benefit? You want to look at what debt that you have. So if we'll talk about me, if I were to pass away, I want to wipe out debt. What foreseeable expenses like college or buying a property are out there? You look at your children or how much college may cost for them. And obviously I've said here before, I don't think college is a necessity. But if I were to pass away early, then I'd want my kids to have other types of benefits wherever they could. And so, so college, may be more likely that they would go to that. So what's that cost going to be? So throw that into the mix here. How much do you spend as a family? And so basically, what amount of income is needed to replace, to be replaced in order to let the lifestyle continue as is, and with this, it winds up costing or requiring a much larger amount than you might see. I think most of the people who come in, regardless of their net worth, most people who come into our office have less than $2 million of coverage. And that is almost always significantly lower than the amount that they should have in place. And just a little bit of math will help you understand that. So especially, if you've got someone who's, in their 40s, then they've got a lot of life left ahead of them there, depending on kids and things like this. And to be able to keep some income coming in to match what they had before, let alone putting money aside for retirement, it takes quite a bit more than what most people have in place. My concept for my wife is I'm not going to be the type of guy who says she can't get remarried. Not like I could control that anyways. If I were to pass, I would want her to, after she had healed, I'd want her to do that. But what I would never, ever want is I would never want her to have to remarry for financial reasons. So I want to make sure there's the right amount of coverage in place there. And that could seem like a really good sales tactic, except when you look at term insurance and just how cheap it is. The commission that you know we can make off selling a term insurance is not worth our time for the most part. It's just the right thing to do this for people. when you do choose to do this, especially if you're looking at term insurance, important to go to an agent that can sell you more than just one company, regardless of how great they, they'll tell you how great their company is if someone's with a captive agent, but typically if they're not. And so I'd much rather see you go to someone who, works or is connected to a brokerage that can look at a number of different carriers. Okay, so back to the other types of policies. So we talk about term, how to figure out what the death benefit is that you might need. The other two main types of life insurance are universal life and whole life. Universal life, think of this basically as a fixed death benefit. So death benefit that you put in place is going to stay the same. You're going to really, for the most part, plan on not accessing the cash inside of that policy. They'll tell you that you can, but when you're accessing the cash, you're hurting its ability to actually keep that policy, that death benefit in place. Because universal life basically gives you a what is the cost of you to buy a 1 year term policy at your age for that amount. So if you got this $5 million policy here for a 45-year-old, what's it cost for a 45-year-old to buy that insurance for 1 year? Well, a lot less than when that person becomes 75. And so universal life is meant to stay in place for, typically you're thinking of having that stay in place for life. So that way, whenever the person passes, they're going to get a payout on that. Their beneficiaries are going to get a payout there. And so when someone keeps getting older and older, the cost of insurance goes up so much. So that's why in the early years, your premium is so much higher than the cost of insurance, because then the insurance company is taking that money and investing the difference between the actual cost of insurance, which they're going to then take off the board as the premium that you're paying them. And then the difference there, they're going to be investing and hope that grows enough to continue to provide in those years when it gets more expensive. And so there are different types of this universal life policy. A guaranteed policy is one that, you can set it to be guaranteed to pay out until I turn 100, or until I turn 121 is the most common. But you can also say, I want this to just be guaranteed until I turn 80 as well. And so to be guaranteed until 121 for that 45-year-old male for $5 million, that'd be $63,000 a year, roughly. And there's, depending on the company, that can change some. If they did a policy that would be a variable policy. A variable policy is one that you're going to actually invest the money, not the insurance company's not necessarily investing, but you can, as the agent, invest those dollars into some different type of investment selections there that you can take on more risk. And so long as the market performs well, this works, heavily in the favor of the client. And so if that same policy performed at a 6% net rate of return there, then instead of needing to pay $63,000 for that policy, it'd be $46,000 for that policy. There are, you'll see, but at that point, we're now bringing market investment risk into our insurance. And so depending on what the purpose of this insurance is, it's often better to keep those risks more bucketized into one column here and not have the life insurance risk that we're trying to protect, the life risk we're trying to protect against, be mixed in with the market risk. So typically, you'll see a lot of people want to steer clear of these variable policies, unless you have an agent who's, who've seen success with us, and then they might be more willing to go there. Another, you might see indexed universal life, which is a slightly different variation of the variable one. So it's still invested, but not quite exposed to the same type of risk there. Survivor is a different one that we should talk about. And survivor means basically you and your spouse. And so we can insure two people here with the premise that, this is money that we want to hand down in our estate when we pass away. And so if we are While one person's still alive, the death benefit doesn't pay out yet until a second person passes. For the insurance company, that reduces the risk, because in this 45-year-old example, there is a chance that one 45-year-old passes early and doesn't make it to their life expectancy table. But the chance that the second one passes significantly earlier, you know, is that's a much lower risk. And so, whereas that policy on just the male for the 45-year-old male for $5 million was $63,000, if you did a survivor policy, meaning between the 45-year-old male and a 45-year-old female, then that reduced the premium down to $48,000. So that's the idea of survivor policies there. But basically, universal life typically has a premium that's set in place and doesn't change. And the insurance company will tell you, if you pay this amount of money, then we'll guarantee the contract stays in force for this long, typically. And again, you're looking at, you normally have a level death benefit there, which could be an issue, you know, in this 45-year-old example, because what $5 million buys them today is not going to be the same by the time they're hitting their life expectancy. So inflation is a factor here. There are certainly some of these policies that don't have guarantees in place, and then there's a danger of them lapsing based on the performance of the investments, which may or may not be in your control. So typically with that, the idea of having a guarantee in place is normally preferred. On to whole life. Kind of big differences with whole life you would look at is, one, the death benefit is typically going to increase over time. And also the cash value as it accumulates in there is something that can be designed for you to access. It's important that you pay attention to this. This depends on the company by company, contract by contract here. Some companies are designed well for you to borrow money out of the policy, and others really are not at all. And so that's really important here, that just because they tell you can borrow from it doesn't mean that they're favorably designed for you to borrow from it. But so inside this, you're going to see a higher premium than what you would from the universal life policies. These can be often highly oversold to be used as income for retirement, you know, tax-free income from retirement. We'll talk about that. And that is true, but not for the typical person. If someone has significant debt or is early in their career, whole life is likely not the right fit for you, which does not mean that a life insurance salesperson isn't going to try to sell you it anyways. And so, the rate you get is better now, and that's true. But again, back to the Dave Ramsey piece, you are mathematically likely to be so much better off to go buy the term policy than buying this whole life policy and paying the extreme, such a higher amount. And I'll give you numbers here in a second of what the premium difference would be. And so, if you invested the difference there, that's when you would see the greater net benefit to you by doing the term. Basically, the higher the net worth the person has, the more attractive these solutions can be, not necessarily are, but and not really for the investment income. There are perks for this, and there are some great strategies, and maybe we'll get into a couple of those here that you can use whole life policies for. The gist of it is, if you want your life insurance to focus on being good life insurance, term's often the best case here. When you're using it for estate planning, you might want it to be a permanent product. That way we guarantee that the estate plan is effectuated based on how you designed it. So inside the policy, how it works is basically the growth of the cash inside of there is tax-free. And so you can take a loan out against it. And so if you've got $100,000 of cash inside the policy, well, you can go take a loan out of it, and you can take a large percentage of that loan, depending on the company, but let's just use 90% as a kind of general number there. You could take 90%. So you can take $90,000 out of that, and you could pay that back, or you don't necessarily have to. And again, talk to your financial team about that to understand the nuances of the contract and how far along you are into paying this, to make sure that it still works for you to take that amount of a loan out. But these policies are often designed to start paying for themselves, or have the income that they're generating with that cash value to to turn around and start paying the premiums for you, so you don't have to continue paying the premiums. We'll go over a couple examples here. So back to our 45-year-old male that's trying to have $5 million in place. If he was going to pay on that policy for every year until he turns 100, that premium would be $97,000 a year. So far cry from the either $2,000 or $10,000 from the term insurance, and even the, you know, $60,000 from the universal life. So now we're talking about $97,000 instead. But if he were to live until his life expectancy, that death benefit has grown now from $5 million to potentially, you know, the illustrations that I ran were more like $15 million. And so the death benefit grows significantly. There's also, you know, cash inside of there that he can access along the way. Some people will design these contracts because, you know, based on income in those situations, they want to pay them out as soon as possible. So they have, you know, one you can pay off in as little as 8 years here, and it'd be $350,000 of premium for 8 years. But then again, at that same life expectancy table, that death benefit would have then grown to $22 million. And so there are things to factor in based on someone's situation here. Really key point behind life insurance is the death benefit is tax-free. And so we're thinking of that from a, you know, from an income standpoint. There's no tax on to the beneficiary to receive that income, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's outside of the estate tax. And so, you know, right now I think it's $13.61 million per year is the federal exemption. And so if a husband and wife are together, they can, you know, they can basically double that as the amount of money that they can hand down to their to anyone, you know, any of their beneficiaries without it paying federal taxes. And that's different than state. You got to pay attention to state tax here. But on the federal level, they're not exposed to any estate tax until they, you know, clear that $13.61 million per person. If you have a life insurance contract, it's going to be added to your estate unless you put it into what's called an irrevocable life insurance trust. It's the most common way to move life insurance outside of your estate. And so that is a, there's some details beyond that that make it very attractive to people to understand when they're trying to, you know, do a strategy where they want to make sure that the benefit is going to get handed down without income or without estate taxes here. So I'm going to walk through a little bit of how an ILIT works. You'll hear people talk about that, ILIT, the Irrevocable Life Insurance Trust. Basically, this is something that the grantor, meaning, you know, the person who's choosing to put this in place, is going to make a gift to the trust. The trust then will be the one that pays the premiums, but not right away. All of the beneficiaries have 30 days to select if they want to take those, the gift that came into the trust, if they want to take that out for personal use or leave it in there to be used to pay the premiums. And so this is what you'll hear, crummy letters. And so the trustee is responsible for sending these out. And basically after 30 days, then the premium, then the money that was gifted into the trust can be used to pay the premiums for the life insurance contract. So long as these premiums are paid by a bank account that's in the name of the ILIT, then the death benefit and the cash value are outside of the estate. They're not subject to a three-year look back either. And so basically this is a way that someone can make a very substantial gift and move that money to avoid any tax upon their passing. The thing that, you know, factors in here is you have this annual exclusion that you can, annual gift exclusion. Right now it's $18,000 per person. So a husband and wife could give $18,000 each to any child or grandchild that they wanted to. And then they could, you know, that money could then be used to go into the trust to pay the premiums for the life insurance contract here. So let's walk you through one example of a creative way to use this irrevocable life insurance trust. We talked a little bit before about when we were selling a business. So 2 weeks ago, We're talking about using a charitable remainder trust when someone's selling a business as a way to pull income off of the asset and not needed to, you know, pay taxes on that upon the sale, but just pay taxes on the lower amount of income that they receive. And so let's just walk through that one here, how we can combine those two tools together to make an even better outcome. So we're going to use an example here that someone's going to sell their business for $10 million. So they're going to sell their business for $10 million. They've got a pretty low cost basis in this. So that means that they're going to owe a significant amount of tax on the sale. And what they do is instead of the individual selling the business, they gift the business to the charitable remainder trust. The charitable remainder trust then sells the business, pays no taxes on the $10 million. So instead of them paying, I think the example we used last time was 35%. So instead of them paying 35% tax and only having $6.5 million left, they now have $10 million left. And so the charitable remainder trust pays no taxes because it's a charitable entity there. And so then it still has $10 million. It uses, and then it starts creating an income stream off of that $10 million gift. And so, you know, so now that that's sold, it's going to go buy an annuity for that. And the annuity is going to pay them 5% a year, or, you know, $500,000 a year. And so with that, now that $500,000 a year income is going to be higher than what it would have been if there was only $6.5 million that was in that trust, and, or, you know, in the individual's name. And so with that extra income, they're going to turn around and buy a $10 million survivor guaranteed universal life policy. So remember, we talked about that. And that might cost them $150,000 a year in premium. This example is for a 55-year-old person. Sorry for the confusion compared to the 45. But basically, they're going to buy that policy now, pay $150,000 in premium there, which is roughly the difference that they would not have been receiving had they just sold the business outright and not put it inside the charitable vehicle. And then here, so now they avoid the capital gains on the $10 million sale of the business. They get a tax deduction for that sale of that charitable gift. They then have this larger lifetime income stream, and they are going to have a $10 million life insurance policy that will pay out their children upon their passing. So they're going to get a much higher income stream. They're going to get the charitable deduction. The charity at the end of their lives is going to get this $10 million gift, and then their beneficiaries are still going to get $10 million as well. And just for the examples, since we talked about this before here, if you wanted to change that to be a whole life policy, so that way if they live to life expectancy, then that number would have increased from $150,000 to closer to $200,000. But the death benefit by the time that this 55-year-old couple hit their life expectancy would be $20 million instead of $10 million. And so this is what you can do to come up, use creative strategies around life insurance as, again, as net worth increases, as complexity increases, it makes more sense to look at some of these other vehicles. But if someone is just, you know, trying to protect their family, their young family, and while they're trying to accumulate their assets, term insurance is most likely the best scenario for you. So again, look at that for, or talk to your team and understand your specific situation. But I hope these last 2 weeks have been helpful to you to understand a little bit more of how insurance works. There is a great need, great importance for you to have it. But at the same time, you just have to be careful of, are you being sold on something, or is someone really trying to do what a fiduciary is supposed to do, which is look to serve your best interest and not theirs. Hope this is helpful. Have a great week.
Thank you again for listening to Wealth Well Done. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast player, and together we'll continue to improve our relationship with money and our effectiveness in stewarding it well.